This Janet Meffer Today podcast is brought to you by Heart for Lebanon. Heart for Lebanon is bringing food, Christian education, and the gospel of Jesus Christ to the thousands of displaced children flooding into Lebanon's refugee camps. Help the Christian response to terrorism today with a gift of $98. 866-485-9187. 866-485-9187 or janetmefford.com.
This is Janet Meffert Today.
Our confidence is in Christ alone.
Are we going to stand with God come what may?
If the Word of God says it, I believe it.
And that's the way it is.
And now, here is Janet Meffert.
Thanks so much for joining us again. Here's a study in contrasts for you. I remember as a little kid, my parents banned me from watching Three's Company because it portrayed a man living as a roommate with two women. And that was way too scandalous for a young child to see. And I agree with that. Now, contrast this with a TV ad that my husband and I happened to see the other night. It was a prostitute speaking as a picture of a condom appeared on screen, urging people to empower female sex workers by voting for Democrats. What in the world has happened in the last several decades? Well, we know it's the sexual revolution. And as my next guest says, it didn't happen by accident, and it has destroyed millions of lives. We're going to talk about it now with Dr. Jennifer Roback Morse. She is the founder of the Ruth Institute and author of the new book, The Sexual State. Dr. Morse, it's great to have you with us. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you so much for having me on. It's great to talk to you again.
It is wonderful to have you here. And I'm just really excited about your book because I think you nail it, absolutely nail it about the sexual revolution. Can you explain how it was that the sexual revolution came about? Because a lot of people think it was just organic. You say, nope, it wasn't organic.
Well, no, it was not. It was, and the way people can see that today is by look around right now at what's going on with transgenderism. Do you really truly see a grassroots movement for gender-neutral bathrooms?
No way.
No, you do not see that. What you see are a lot of rich people, foundations, big corporations pumping this thing, just pumping it like crazy,
yeah.
Right?
Yep.
And if you actually look back at the earlier phases of the sexual revolution, you see something like that for each one of the phases. And that's what I do in the book, is I break the sexual revolution down into three big parts, and I go through each one of those three big parts and talk about where, you know, well, first of all, what it is, and second of all, where it came from and how it wasn't normal people who did it. It was always elite people. And then finally, in each case, I spend some time talking about the propaganda that we have all been subjected to. And, Janet, there's so much propaganda in favor of the sexual revolution. People don't even realize that that they're surrounded by it. It's like a fish not knowing what water is. You know, I mean,
yeah.
you're just surrounded by it, and you don't realize just how all-encompassing that propaganda is. So
yeah.
That's more or less what I do in the sexual state.
Yeah. Well, it's so important that people understand this. And I talk about this propaganda issue all the time, how people are swimming in propaganda and don't see it for what it is. Going back,
right,
though, to the time of the sexual revolution, for instance, when you talk about transgenderism, immediately I think of groups like the Human Rights Campaign and these homosexual,
right,
activist groups that make millions of dollars to push this kind of stuff on unsuspecting families. But when you go back to the beginnings of the sexual revolution, who were the elites that brought it about? Like, exactly how did it form and get and spread?
Well, the first big idea that I talk about in the book is the idea that a good society should do everything possible to separate sex and babies.
Yeah.
We should make it so people can have as much sex as they want without a live baby ever showing up. That idea, and I call that the contraceptive ideology, I study that idea starting with the move to overturn the laws against contraception in the state of Connecticut, because that's where the big court case finally came down. As you probably know, most of your listeners probably know,
yes,
Griswold versus Connecticut in 1965. That Supreme Court case did as much as anything, you know, to kick off this whole sexual revolution. But if you look at what happened in the lead up to that case, what you see is for 30 years, literally, Janet, 30 years, the proponents of overturning these laws, they were going into the state legislature in Connecticut every year trying to say, let's overturn this law. And every year, ordinary people would look at them and say, No, this is going to harm public morals. We don't need to do that. You know, we're going to have kids having sex without being married and all the rest of it. It's going to be a mess. No, we don't want this. And it literally 30 years. And when you look at it, the people who were financing it were kind of what you might call in Connecticut, kind of the old blue blood Connecticut families kind of people. By the time it got round to the court cases, they were calling it the Yale Project because so many people from Yale Law School and Yale Medical School had put the case together, basically, had created the staged cases that they were going to use to overturn this. You know, and in the meantime, these sort of poor immigrant people are writing to their state legislature saying, no, we don't want to overturn this. And part of the reason this came about, and this is the other thing people need to know, the early arguments about contraception were basically eugenics arguments, hidden eugenics population control type of arguments. And it wasn't really until the 70s when John D. Rockefeller III, who was a big, big population control guy, you know, he finally figured out that if you put this little veneer of feminism over the top of it and women's empowerment over the top of it, you can get people to agree to things that they weren't going to agree to before.
Right.
You know?
Yes.
And that's been kind of the story there. You know, population control was at the heart of the press for not just legalizing contraception, but actively promoting it. And Janet, that's a piece people don't understand. You know, you could get condoms in any drugstore in Connecticut prior to this court ruling.
Wow.
Nobody was enforcing this rule. They wanted it to be 100% legal so that they could actively promote it and have the government paying for contraception for poor people. That's what it was all about.
Goodness. Yeah, and I think a lot of people that just misses the mark for them. They don't know anything about that. And I think it doesn't always go back for people when they think of the sexual revolution. They think of things like the free love hippies. They don't think about the Griswold decision. But that really was the first domino to fall, because it wasn't too long after that we got legalized abortion and Roe v. Wade, which makes sense. These dominoes that fell after the Griswold decision, it makes total sense that once you take sex outside of marriage and outside of the intimacy, creating a life that needs a family, then, you know, everything goes to pot after that.
Right. Janet, you hit the nail right on the head with that one, because that's the part people don't get. You know, people have known how to space their pregnancies and time their pregnancies using so-called natural methods, traditional methods, you know, things like fertility awareness and extended lactation, you know, things like that. People have known how to do that because you can see fertility declining over time way before there were any pills around, you know. People have figured out how to do that. What was unique about what happened in the 60s is it was not good enough for the radicals. It was not good enough for a husband and wife to be inside their marriage deciding what they want to do. What they wanted was to have a whole society where you could be having sex with somebody that you weren't married to or who was married to someone else, and not have any babies, and not, you know, therefore not have any problems. See, so if you're a husband and wife and you're using, you know, traditional methods, natural methods, however you want to call it, and you have a baby, you know, and it doesn't work perfectly, it's like, oh, well, itty-bitty-boo-boo, this is our surprise baby. Lots of families have the little caboose on the end of their family. It's not the end of the world. It's not the end of the world. But if you're messing around with somebody who's married to somebody else, or you're messing around with some guy who's a whack job and you really would never in the million years want to co-parent with that guy, now you get pregnant, now your contraception fails, now you got a much bigger problem to deal with. And that's what's really different about what took place after the 1960s. It's not the technology. It's not even whether it was legal. It's the ideology that the elites were promoting to say everybody gets to have as much sex as they want and nothing bad will happen. That's what we're living with.
Yeah, no. This is such an important point that you're making, because when you get down to it, the sex that really suffers more is females, because this idea that, well, now we can be as promiscuous as men and we can just self-actualize. Well, you know, we've seen the fruit of that whole movement. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be back with Dr. Jennifer Roback Morse. Her book is called The Sexual State. Fascinating stuff. You're listening to Janet Mefford Today. Stay with us. Hi, this is Janet Mefford. It's the worst humanitarian crisis in our lifetime. 2 million refugees are in the tiny country of Lebanon, and most of these are kids with only a surviving mother living in disease-ridden tent settlements. They are the innocent victims of war. But you can help. Call 866-485-9187. Your gift of $98 will help rescue 18 of these children and bring them to the Heart for Lebanon Hope Centers, where they can learn, be fed, and most importantly, begin a relationship with Jesus Christ. Rescue a classroom for Christ before someone else captures them for evil. Call 866-485-9187. That's 866-485-9187. Our goal is to take care of 61 classroom days. Will you please help me sponsor 1, 2, or even 5 classrooms right now? Call 866-485-9187, or there's a banner to click at janetmefford.com. Are you among the millions of Americans who feel uncertain when it comes to their health care? As a Christian, are you looking for health care that doesn't violate your morals and convictions? We're happy to inform you that there is a solution, and that solution is Liberty HealthShare. Liberty HealthShare is a community of like-minded Christians who work together to pay for their medical costs. It allows you to decide how, when, and where you'll access health care, so you can make the best choice for you and your family. Starting at $199 per month for a single, up to $529 a month for a family. That's mom, dad, and all the kids. This is how healthcare should be. For more information, call 855-585-4237 or visit libertyhealthshare.org. That's libertyhealthshare.org. Regain control over your healthcare costs. Together, we're changing healthcare for good. That number again, 855-585-4237 or visit libertyhealthshare.org. We are back on Janet Mefford Today, and boy, do I appreciate this great book, The Sexual State. Dr. Jennifer Roback Morse from the Ruth Institute is joining us and tracing the background here on how we got to where we are with this insanity that we're living with, this, attack the gender binary, and a family is whatever you say it is. I mean, this has roots, and it goes back to the sexual revolution, which in fact was pushed by elites. It wasn't something that was organic. Now, when we're talking about the issue of abortion, this is really interesting to me, Dr. Morse, because Planned Parenthood loves contraception. You know, it's kind of ironic. You would think they wouldn't like that because they make a lot of blood money off murdered babies. So what's the connection there between we love contraception at Planned Parenthood in order to get the girls to have abortions?
Well, the issue is that all contraception fails sometimes. Okay.
Right.
And they're selling you the backup plan, which is abortion. All right. So if you look at the statistics, this is not something that's collected by official agencies. It's collected by some of the clinics. And it seems to me every time I have checked this, if you look at the women, if you ask the women who come in for abortions, about 45% of them will tell you that they were using contraception in the month that they got pregnant.
Wow.
Okay. So contraception does not work perfectly. But this fact is not really, the significance of that fact is not really explained to people, right? You know, the full significance of that fact is kind of hidden, you might even say.
Yes.
And in fact, in the chapters on propaganda, I think that's probably the longest chapter in the book is the chapter on propaganda surrounding the contraceptive ideology, because I go into the fact that it fails, the fact that there are risks associated with both contraception and abortion, health risks for the woman, and just the way the whole elite ruling class that we live under, just the way they suppress that information, you know, just it's, you know, trying to find out accurate information about that is really complicated. So the short answer to your question there, why does Planned Parenthood love contraception? Because it's the thing that's setting people up in the next round for needing an abortion.
And the
real puzzle to me is, why do gay men favor abortion?
I know.
Don't you think that's a little weird?
I think that's more than a little weird. And it's kind of funny that you mentioned that. I was at a pro-life center years ago on Michigan Avenue in Chicago, and I was with a number of pro-life activists, and we were there, and I was covering it as a reporter, but I was obviously sympathetic and supportive of what they were doing. And the ACT UP was there, and it was all a bunch of homosexuals. And I was thinking to myself, why do you guys care about abortion? This doesn't make any sense to me at all. But you know, if you think of it as the ideology, the overarching ideology, as we would say, of the left, now it makes more sense, because it's about sexual debauchery and freedom and all the rest of the stuff they push on us.
That's right. They have they're united by a common idea of what human sexuality is all about. And by the way, I hate to correct Janet Medford, because Janet Medford is brilliant, but
not.
I say the sexual revolution is bigger than the whole left and right divide.
Yeah,
it's bigger than that. You know, because if you've been covering these stories for a long time, you know that many people who have solid right-wing credentials on other issues are very squishy on social issues, and in fact are actively hostile to it.
That's it.
And when you see that how much population control was involved in the early days of promoting contraception and abortion and so on, you know, those aren't left-wing people doing that. You know, that's John D. Rockefeller III.
Good point.
Nobody's going to say he was a communist or something, you know?
Yes.
I mean,
yes.
It transcends left and right.
Great point.
And the only people who can really fight against it effectively are people of faith.
Correct.
You know, and it doesn't even matter what the faith is practically. You know, all of the Christian traditions held pretty much the same thing about what is the purpose of human sexuality. Do children really need their own parents? Yes, they do. You know, are men and women really different? Is that part of the created order, deliberately created by God for his good and holy purposes? Yes, Christians and Jews all believe that. You know?
Absolutely.
And the alternative view is that the body is suspect. You know, the fact that we come in male and female, you know, this is a problem. That's a problem. We got to do something about that.
Oh.
It's unfair.
But it's gotten so weird. It's gotten so weird. Yeah. I mean, you go back. Okay, fine. You want to talk about no-fault divorce because you want to talk about this one woman and she couldn't easily get a divorce and she was being beaten. Okay, fine. Leave that all in the background. Talk. You know, you can talk about that on one level. But now we're to the point where they're saying two men can get married, which is insane. And we're talking about dispensing with a gender binary. You are what you believe you are, which is ludicrous. Why has it gone so far? And to your point of this is not just a problem on the left, you can see, obviously, even in the Republican Party, there are a number of candidates that are very squishy on this now. They're getting big money from big pro-gay donors. And so it's shifting on the right as well. How do you account for all of this? How do you explain it?
Well, the money is a very important fact. So particularly when you're talking about politics and political candidates and so on, you must never underestimate the influence of money. And the fact is that there's a lot of money on the pro-sexual revolution side, whether it's coming through the Human Rights Campaign or the people behind the Human Rights Campaign, you know, people like George Soros and Tim Gill and, who's that guy? I can see his picture plain as day. Paul Singer, yes, who's a big Republican donor, and he was the guy. In fact, he was the one that helped me see this in the first place, because he's the one who bankrolled the state legislature of the state of New York rewriting the definition of marriage.
Literally
bought a handful of state legislators, and quite blatantly, quite openly. You know,
goodness.
And you're going, whoa, this is corruption of a very deep sort. But But wait, where are we going with this? Why am I talking about money in all this? You asked me. I feel like there was a thread that I missed.
Yeah, well, the issue of the fact that on the GOP side, you even see squishiness on the issue of same-sex so-called marriage. But we're at a point where we're actually saying with a straight face that two men can get married when it's biologically impossible to consummate the marriage, if I may say so. It's insane.
Right. So there's squishy. There's money involved. And there's also the fact that they don't know what to say. They don't know how to defend themselves. And finally, I would say that some of them are squishy on things like gay marriage because they are already morally compromised on things like divorce.
Bingo.
You know, in other words, there's a kind of guilty conscience operating in the background. Maybe they had a girlfriend they took for an abortion back in the day. You know, there's a lot of places where ordinary people have perhaps been morally compromised. So that they feel they can't speak out and say, well, you know, that's, you know, what I did was wrong, but that's really weird. No, they can't even say that. They can't bring themselves to resist and oppose these things that really are, as you say, just getting weirder by the minute.
I agree with you. I think that's a big component to all of this. It's something I've discussed before with others. And you know, the idea has been, for example, someone will say, well, I have a brother who is fine with gay marriage, but 10 years ago, he was vehemently opposed to it. But now the attitude is, well, you know, I look at my life and I've been pretty promiscuous. So, you know, who am I to say?
Right.
Well, you know, that's not the way we make moral decisions, is based on our own experience.
Yeah.
We have to have, again, this gets back to the authority of God and the authority of his word. And I know both Catholics and evangelicals are agreed upon sexual norms in the family. But to the issue of the family, Dr. Morse, the breakdown of the family is a crisis of epic proportion in our society. And I see these elites wanting to really dismantle the family. There are gay activists who will say that we just want to get rid of the family. And I don't know how many Americans really grasp that. And they've been successful up to this point. Do you think that they actually could be even more successful on that front?
Well, you know, they have all the momentum on their side right now. You know, if the church doesn't sit up and take notice and get something done, they will succeed. And sometimes people ask me, Dr. Morse, where is this going to end? What's the bottom line in this? What do these people really want? You know, and I believe the following is true. I believe that the gender ideology, what I call the gender ideology, that everything that looks like differences between men and women, that's all socially constructed, can all be reconstructed, and you can reconstruct it personally. You know, that the gender of the body, the sex of the body, is irrelevant. What those people want, the end game of that, is to remove all references to male and female throughout the law and society. Hmm. That's where they're headed with that. Okay. On the divorce ideology side, the divorce ideology is the idea that a good society should separate both sex and babies from marriage. And the underlying idea being that kids don't really need their own parents. Kids are so resilient, you know, they'll be fine. No matter how many times the parents partner and repartner and couple and recouple, you know, the kids are fine. The adults are little snowflakes, hothouse flowers or something that absolutely have to have their sexual gratification. But the kids, they're resilient. You know,
yeah.
They'll be fine.
Awesome.
The end game of the divorce ideology is contract parenting. And this, I started seeing this in the law reviews back when I was first got involved in the gay marriage issue. The law review, sex radicals is what I call them, what they want is a system that completely disconnects parenthood from biology.
Oh, my.
That there's no presumption that just because you are the biological mother or the biological father of the child that you will have legal parenting rights.
Oh, you know, I think you're right on the money. It's why the book is so important. It's called The Sexual State. Dr. Jennifer Roback Morse, thank you so much, Dr. Morse. It went so fast.
I know. It was a lot of fun.
Well, we'll do it again soon. Thanks for being here. We'll be right back. This Janet Mefford Today podcast is brought to you by Heart for Lebanon. Heart for Lebanon is bringing food, Christian education, and the gospel of Jesus Christ to the thousands of displaced children flooding into Lebanon's refugee camps. Help the Christian response to terrorism today with a gift of $98. 866-485-9187. 866-485-9187 or janetmefford.com. We're back on Janet Mefford Today. There's some interesting news about Obamacare heading into the midterms. As USA Today reports, Obamacare is becoming a central issue in state attorneys general races. Now, as we know, Republican attorneys general across the country are behind the case Texas v. United States. This is the case arguing that the individual mandate in Obamacare is unconstitutional. The plaintiffs are a Texas-led coalition of 20 states and two individuals, and they've cited a law passed late last year that eliminated the penalty and argued the individual mandate is unconstitutional. So they're arguing is the rest of Obamacare. California, meanwhile, leads 16 states and the District of Columbia in defending Obamacare. And now both political parties expect record-breaking fundraising for the 30 contested elections for state attorneys general this year. Democrats are trying to translate narrow public support for Obamacare into the votes needed to seize a handful of these posts that are now held by Republicans. So Obamacare still very much in the news, still very much a problem. We're all wondering why it hasn't been fully repealed and replaced yet. We're going to get some thoughts on it now from Dale Bellis, Executive Director of Liberty Health Share, a national nonprofit healthcare sharing ministry. Dale, great to have you with us. How are you?
Janet, doing wonderfully well. Thank you so much for the invitation.
Well, it's great to have you here. What is your take on this tug of war over Obamacare and how it's just still going on and it still hasn't been fully repealed and replaced? How do you see this story right now?
In fact, a recent poll indicates that as we prepare for these midterm elections, healthcare, its costs, and its access is the number one issue on the minds of voters.
Wow.
And it's true across the nation. It's on everyone's mind. It's a part of our conversation. And it's just indicative of the fact that the right questions are not being asked, Janet. The analysis is about how does a third-party pay system solve the issue of costs and access, and we, a part of the healthcare sharing movement, just basically say there's a different alternative. There's a means for meeting healthcare costs based upon our shared values and beliefs, where we pay each other's medical bills, and it's our money at stake. That totally changes the mentality. It changes the game in terms of healthcare costs.
Well, that's right. When you mentioned this poll, I think that's extremely relevant to our discussion because if healthcare costs and access to healthcare is the number one issue that's on the minds of voters heading into the midterms, what are they saying? What are you hearing from people that you talk to about what their biggest concerns are pertaining to the healthcare issue?
Their number one concern is rising costs. Just out of control, skyrocketing expense as it relates to meeting healthcare expenses.
Right.
That's the number one issue. That's what we hear from those who come and join our healthcare sharing ministry. They tell us our expense relative to participating is 50% less than what the average cost is in the secular world.
Wow.
So that tells us something. That tells us that costs can be controlled, number one, that the methodology and formula followed by the third-party pay system is a failure, and there's a better way. It's when you put decisions and choices in the hands of the individual consumer, that's when the environment changes.
Well, that's right. Now, it's interesting. We've talked about this before, Dale, and the fact that healthcare sharing ministries like Liberty Health Share have experienced a surging popularity because people are seeing that the third-party payer system is not working for them. But for those who are not really familiar with what Liberty Health Share does, can you explain what the healthcare sharing model is all about?
Sure. We are a nationwide nonprofit association of men, women, families who all unite around the common cause of paying each other's medical bills. And so every month my money goes to another person who has expenses. If I have a cost, those same individuals are there to help share in my bills. And we do that in a like-minded community of faith and values where my dollars, number one, doesn't violate my conscience and its goals, but number two, is directed to another person. So our investment every month, Janet, is into the life of another individual. We send them encouragement, prayer, and notes and words of cheer, and we stand with each other during those times, sometimes the biggest crises of our lives.
Well, right. Why is it? You mentioned the third-party payer system, and we know that whenever you add levels of bureaucracy, your costs are going to go up. Is that really the fundamental problem with why insurance is so out of control and Obamacare is so expensive and people with private health insurance have seen their premiums rise so much because fundamentally of the third-party payer system?
Without a doubt, because whenever we send our money away to a third party to then pay the costs of our health care, two things transpire. Number one, I lose a lot of freedom, individual choice, and autonomy because that third person, that third party, is now making choices and decisions about the care of my health. That's number one. And number two, they spend the money according to their priorities and the issues that they see as important and dole that money out to pay my costs. And I'm out of the equation.
Right.
I really don't have any motivation to be a cost control partner when it's coming from somebody else's pocket. And that's the fundamental flaw.
Well, it is. Now, for people who are unfamiliar with healthcare sharing ministries like Liberty HealthShare, what kind of coverage changes? This is often a question that will come up. If I make a switch from insurance and the third-party payer system, does my coverage change if I'm doing healthcare sharing? What is the difference?
The principle is simple. We're here to assist each other with costs and expenses that are unexpected and unaffordable. And so if you can plan for it, expect it, budget for it, we want to pay for those small expenses out of our own pockets. For instance, dental is a classic example.
Yeah.
We don't share in dental costs. I guess it's possible to have a $5,000 toothache, but highly unlikely. Boy, you can sure have a $5,000 overnight visit with a feverish child to the emergency room.
Right.
And so we're there to help with those things that are unexpected and unaffordable. So after we pay out of our pockets what we call an annual unshared amount, $2,250 for a family, we fulfill that responsibility. Then we begin sharing those costs up to $1 million for every incident, and that's proven to be more than sufficient, adequate for our members' needs.
Well, now you have different options, don't you, for consumers depending on your family situation, depending on how much coverage you want. You offer different levels of care, don't you, or plans?
We have three different sharing programs, basically to meet people's priorities and needs and budgets. And they're all there on our website for folks to review. The vast majority of our members, though, participate in what we call Liberty Complete, which is what I just described about sharing eligible medical bills up to $1 million per incident. But there are other options and choices for folks to consider.
Right. And best of all, I know we've talked about this before, you can go to the doctor in the hospital you want to go to, unlike Obamacare, where we were told
it's critical.
Yeah.
That's a critical factor, Janet, because it's a part of, we believe, a part of our freedom, our choices, our individual expression of choice to determine what doctor, what hospital to go to. And gratefully, the vast, vast majority of doctors' hospitals gladly receive the payments from the members of Liberty HealthShare because it is fair and reasonable and prompt.
Right. Well, while not violating your conscience, I should say, this is another really important part of it, because the abortion and contraception mandates that have been in Obamacare and people going against their conscience, this is another advantage, isn't it, of Liberty HealthShare, because you're not going to have your conscience violated by participating.
Frankly, we've never before in the history of our fair republic seen such an intrusion by the federal government into the conscience choices of believers across the nation. And so thankfully, we are exempt as a healthcare sharing ministry from both the mandates and the fines of the Affordable Care Act. We make those choices and decisions among ourselves And we're just committed not to use our money for things that would violate our conscience. Abortion, obviously, being the most egregious example.
Very good. Very good. Well, check them out. LibertyHealthShare.org. Dale Bellis with us. Thank you so much, Dale. Good to talk to you.
Janet, what a pleasure. Thank you for the invitation. God bless.
God bless you, too. We'll be back. Hi, this is Janet Mefford. Imagine what it would be like if America were decimated by a civil war and millions of us had to flee for our lives. Imagine living in a crowded tent city with very little to eat, no education for your kids, and the threat of Islamic radicalization and sex trafficking all around you. Well, that's been the situation in Lebanon for several years now. In fact, 2 million of these refugees are living in tent cities in Lebanon, but there, they're finding the hope of Jesus Christ. That's been the situation because of our wonderful ministry partner, Heart for Lebanon. Heart for Lebanon is there among the refugees right now, offering the gospel of Jesus Christ, food to eat, and a Christian education for the many, many children who are in great need. At Heart for Lebanon's Hope Centers, little children like John are learning to read, getting nutritious meals, and hearing the good news that Jesus is his Savior. Not only are these children coming to know the Lord, but so are their parents. And when they go back home, they'll be taking the gospel with them to parts of the Middle East that many of us could never reach. Your gift of $22 will bring a day of food and Christ-centered education to 4 of these refugee children, while a gift of $98 will feed and educate an entire classroom full of children. That's 18 children for one entire day. We really need your help right now. So we're asking, call right now, 866-485-9187. That's 866-485-9187. Or there's a banner to click at janetmefford.com. Let's help create the next great Christian missionary force. The Lord is working in the hearts of refugee children in Lebanon, but we need your financial help. 866-485-9187. Again, your gift of $22 will bring a day of food and Christ-centered education to 4 refugee children. Please call now, 866-485-9187, 866-485-9187, or there's a banner to click at janetmefford.com. We're back on Janet Mefford today. Little update from Azusa Pacific University, and I have to give them kudos for this. As we were reporting on last week's show, Azusa Pacific had taken out language in the student standards of conduct that would prohibit LGBT students from having romanticized relationships on campus. You know, we went into all of that. Played you that audio from that LGBT activist, Aaron Green, who's been working with APU administrators and clergy for the last year, and they've been meeting with LGBT activist groups and different students and alumni, apparently, to craft this whole thing. And then, late Friday, the university statement from the Board of Trustees came out and they took it all back. They said last week reports circulated about a change to the undergraduate student standards of conduct. That action concerning romanticized relationships was never approved by the board and the original wording has been reinstated. They go on to say, we pledge to boldly uphold biblical values and not waver in our Christ-centered mission. We will examine how we live up to these high ideals and enact measures that prevent us from swaying from that sure footing, which is fantastic. I was thrilled to see this. I was delighted because, you know, APU has been a great institution for a long, long time. A lot of great people have gone to APU, worked at APU, strong Christians. We need colleges like that. But here's the thing about it all. Erin Green, who heads up this Brave Commons, she's co-executive director of this gay activist group called Brave Commons that I told you about last week. Brave Commons is a rather new venture, but she's joined forces with some other key activists around the country. And their goal is to get gay students at every Christian college and Christian university in the United States to stand up to make our Christian colleges more pro-gay. That's just what they're up to. And I know this is a real shock to the system of a lot of Christians who don't follow this stuff, who think, I'm going to send my child off to a Christian college or university and everything's going to be wonderful. I'm going to prevent any sort of clashes in the cultural wars that they might encounter on a secular university. Not true. I wish it were true, but it's not true. So this is the background of Brave Commons. At any rate, Erin Green put out a video after working for more than a year to try to get this change enacted at APU, and she's an alumna of APU, she put out this video and reacted to it. I want to play this for you. This is cut one.
What concerns me, among many other things, with this reversal, is that the Board of Trustees claims that by reinstituting this policy, that they're doing a, abiding by a more traditional view of Christianity, that they're remaining true to their God-first principle and their Christian principles. But clearly, this dissonance and incongruency within the internal structures of APU, the Board of Trustees, and the administration who decided to drop the policy shows the opposite of that.
All right. Well, to some extent, I agree with her on that, because if it is the case that she's been hanging out with the administrators and talking to people on the faculty and they're all more pro-LGBT than anybody knows, that's a problem in and of itself, right? So you have a disconnect perhaps between the board and the administration. That's what she's claiming. And it gets worse because she described her interactions with some APU administrators prior to the decision. Listen to this. This is cut two.
You know, my senior year, I spent a lot of time in dialogue and discussion with APU administration, with clergy at APU. They came to me and they said, Aaron, please help us do a better job at loving the LGBTQ community on our campus. How can we do that? You are a great student. You have a good pastoral sense. You take the Bible and scripture and your faith seriously. Please tell us ways that we can help. I spent hours of my time giving freely to these folks asking for my help. I became vulnerable. I put my trust in them with my stories. I had to relive the trauma of retelling my story in order for them to hear it, because it's important for people to know. They asked me to recruit other LGBTQ students and alumni to come and tell their stories, to relive their traumas, to put themselves in a vulnerable place among these key administrators and clergy. Hours were spent doing this, several different meetings in front of a ton of different people bearing witness to this. They looked us in the eye and said that this policy that APU had in its student code of conduct was harmful, stigmatizing, discriminatory, and wrong, and needed to be removed. This is what Azusa Pacific administrators said to us. They asked us to trust them, and we believed them.
Now, I have no idea if what she just said here is the truth, but if it is the truth, there's a big problem remaining at Azusa Pacific. Because if you have a number of administrators who are coming to lesbian students to ask, how can we do better, then you're putting the cart before the horse here, because it isn't the job of lesbians on campus to tell Christian administrators how they are to run a Christian university. And unless there's some hate crimes taking place in which people are hurling rocks at students like her or doing something truly harmful, then what in the world are you doing? Why are you recruiting gay activist groups and gay activists who want to queer the college Christian college and university, institutions across this country? Why are you giving them the time of day? I'm not saying you shouldn't be kind to people. I don't mean it that way. But what are you doing? What are you doing? And administrators are saying the policy by which you don't allow romanticized gay relationships on campus is harmful and discriminatory. If that's the case, those people need to be fired. That's just my opinion, if that's true. Now, if she's making it up, I hope APU will clarify that. But that's a big problem, isn't it? That's a huge problem. And it goes along with what she said in that podcast I played for you last week. This is what she said before the policy was reversed. Listen very closely to this cut. This is three.
Azusa Pacific, specifically, where I graduated from, and what a great way to leave that school. Here's an example of something very positive. I predict that Azusa Pacific in Southern California, and I'm not trying to plug my university or anything, but I really do truly predict that it will be the first Christian university to be openly inclusive. We're quite a ways from that occurring, but I feel like that could happen there. Most of the staff at Azusa Pacific, I mean, faculty, and especially in the biblical and theology department, are affirming. And they're very open and vocal during lectures, and they're very supportive of students from all backgrounds in their classes. Even what they're teaching, their liberation theology, James Cone, I mean, womanist theology, queer theology, all kinds of beautiful, wonderful things we should all be getting as Christians and folks who want to really dig deeply into scripture and dig deeply into hermeneutics.
Oh, man. Okay, so we revisit that clip that I played for you last week in which she claims that most of the faculty on the APU campus are affirming, and especially in the biblical studies and theology department, where they are teaching, among other things, as she claims, Black liberation theology, that's the brainchild of James Cone, womanist theology, so feminism, and queer theology. You know what that is. So this is very, very disturbing. Very, very disturbing. And it points out a broader problem, as we've talked quite a bit on the show about Revoice and how you have gay activists who are trying to queer the church. Same thing is happening on the college campuses of Christian universities and colleges. Obviously, it's not just a problem in the secular realm. It's a problem right in our own backyard, which is why it's such a big story. Even if you don't have any personal connection to Azusa Pacific University, never have been there, don't have anybody in your family or circle of friends who goes there, doesn't matter. Because this is what's coming. This is what's coming against the Church of Jesus Christ. And sometimes the enemies are from within. And unfortunately, we have to be aware of these things. The Word of God tells us to be discerning, to know what is going on, and to fight for the faith, which was once delivered to the saints. We are going to, in my opinion, have to fight for the faith in these coming days in new ways that have been previously unbeknownst to us as American evangelical Christians. It's just the case, because we are getting an increasing number of enemies within. People who are inside our churches, which the Bible has clearly told us would happen, and increasingly in the last days, people inside the churches who are about corrupting the church, moving it away from the gospel of Jesus Christ, moving it away from its biblical foundations and its biblical moorings, bringing us into new progressive intersectional queer realities in the name of some kind of great spiritual progress, and it's all a hoax. And we better not fall for it. And we better pay attention to what's going on, not only in our churches, but if you have a child, a student, or someone you know at a Christian college, keep your eyes open, because you never know. And again, I commend the APU board for doing what it did, but it sounds like they have their work cut out for them in other realms there on campus, if what this gay activist says is true. Thanks for joining us on Janet Mefford today. Always a pleasure to be with you. We'll see you next time.